the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. A nouveau episode avec mon collègue Len. Len, how you doing today, buddy? Great to see you. You're looking well. We're starting to get a tan. I don't know if you ever look back in the video catalog, but around this time every year, you and me start to get a little color, as many paisans do. Feels good. Good to see you. How you doing?
Great. You shouldn't see me without my watch or whatever, because it's funny because I have this like white line where it is, whatever. I'm wonderful, Joey, just as peachy as it can be, because the weather finally has taken a turn for the better and I can enjoy the sunshine and the warm weather and everything that comes along with it. But Joey, how are you over there?
I'm great, man. I'm doing really good. Sun's out, guns out. Yeah, the only gun's legal in Canada now. No comment on that from us, unfortunately. There, Boomer the Broken Ruler. Great rebrand from our friend Defiant. Jess, Jordab, it's good to see you guys, man. Thanks for coming. I know there's other people in the chat I can see on my counter here. So the silent majority, good to see you guys too. Len, we got lots to talk about today. But before we start, as always, we have one sponsor today. Or are we doing the second sponsor yet? I didn't sign anything today. Did you sign anything today?
No, okay. You are okay, tipping so
maybe,
our hat.
Yeah, maybe next week we'll talk about our cards. We'll talk about the sponsor.
Yeah, so it's potentially, yeah. So we only have the one right now, and it is ShakePay.
The best, yeah. Man. If you're a Canadian, buy and sell your Bitcoin, though you should never sell, obviously. I don't have to tell you guys that. Outstanding service, outstanding app. It's quick. I think, Len, like I did a deposit yesterday on a Sunday, the Lord's Day, the day of rest. It took like 10 minutes to get there, maybe max. And fill up my account with some CAD before heading over to the grocery store to buy some stuff. So that was good. Leads me to the promotions. As always, these guys have a bunch of stuff going on, which we like to see, and we hope that you'll try them out. Because of this, the first thing, Shaking Sats. If you use our promo code CBP, Charlie Beta Peter, you can sign up for ShakePay or get one of your friends to sign up for ShakePay. And they can shake their phone every morning. And what do they get, Len? They get Sats streamed right to their wallet. Plus, on your first $100 buy, ShakePay will just hand you $30. No one else is handing you $30 except for these people who want to give out UBI, which we'll be talking about today. There's no better way to start someone on a Bitcoin journey than with a free 30% return on their investment. So you got that. Then you got the Sats back card. If you spend out of your CAD balance, ShakePay will give you 2% back on your first 5,000 plus 1% back after that. I think I got that right. And if you do go, over, I think that first 5,000, that 1% goes forever. There's no end of the total thing. I think it's just a monthly, some huge number that no one listening to this show and no one doing this show will ever get to. So don't worry about that. If you're spending 50 grand a month on your ShakePay card, certainly you got better advice than you and I could ever give. And finally, Len, the last thing, ShakePaid, that's the best, man. You use your card, you go to the store, use your card, you get your oil changed, maybe get some groceries. I've been buying prosciutto shoulder at the store. They got it pre-shrink wrapped, Len, so I've been buying that instead of bacon. Very good. We can talk about that in the after show. And if you buy this stuff or anything you want, they might just cop it for you. Not bad, man. You get everything back in Satoshi. So and I don't think there's a limit on that outside of what the tap will allow. So I think it's like $250 or $300. Pretty good.
It depends on the merchant.
Depends on the merchant. All that stuff said, give them a shot. Tell your friends. Support the show. CBP is the code. We hope you check them out. Buddy, the price of Bitcoin right now on today, the 30th day of May in the year of our Lord, 2022. How many more things can I say? Will I pull up trading?
I'll pull up the price of Canadian. It's 40,193. So we eclipsed a 40,000 marker in Canadian. So
had a good afternoon and a good overnight too. 31,654 in US currency. So we do have a giveaway tonight. We'll do that in a bit. So you know, hang on to your hats there. Len, let's get into it, shall we? We got many interesting things to talk about today. Unless you want to do some more housekeeping.
Yeah, there's still some more housekeeping to take care of. Number one, it's to our American viewers, listeners, everything in between. Happy Memorial Day if you are watching this on the Monday. If not, it's going to be belated Memorial Day because fortunate markets were closed down south. But over here, we were rocking and rolling with some really good times if you had Bitcoin miners on your balance sheet. So I had Bitfarms. I love it. It's a great day for me. Number one. Number two, podcasting 2.0. I'm going to keep talking about this until everybody's ears are bleeding. These are programs that are created by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. And typically the ones that I shill is Breeze and Fountain. Check them out. You could use that to replace your typical or your currently your podcast player. You could use this as a replacement. So it's built by Bitcoiners, and you could tip sats if you want. You don't have to do that. It's just, it's a nicety that's included in that. Also, Joey, June 4th, we're going to be at Inocentes this Saturday, June 4th.
Starting at 4 o'clock. I'm going to go for a bit. I'm going for a bit because I got some other stuff planned that day, but I'm going to make an appearance. Don't, you know, be mad if I am brief with you or, you know, I'm kind of doing my thing in the room. I'd like to see as many people as I can. I appreciate you guys coming, of course, and supporting the show. And so I'm going to try and, you know, see as many people as I can. And hopefully in the summertime when I'm a little more free, maybe we can do an event or we can attend another event. So looking forward to that. You want to talk about the tahinis thing on Thursday too? Should we bring that up? I think I just saw that on Twitter, Shake Pay and Tahinis.
Yeah. So there's in Tahinis in Hamilton from 11:30 to 12:30. I believe Shake Pay. Am I right on that?
Yeah. They're paying for it. I'm pretty sure.
So the food is on ShakePay from 11:30 to 12:30 on this Thursday. I don't know what date it is. It's June 2nd?
That's second.
In Hamilton, the Hamilton Tahinis on Main Street. Check it out. You have a one-hour window to cop some free food courtesy of ShakePay.
I'm zipping down. Are you zipping down?
I'd like to, yes.
I'm going to try.
I will try, yeah. And yeah. Lastly, I'm not sure how much we could say, but there is...
Don't say anything.
I wasn't going to give too much. I was going to say something in the private chat.
I was very busy today. I meant to tell you, don't say anything. We'll talk about it after the show and probably next week, but we can't talk about it right now. So
okay,
just leave that for now.
And there's potential CBP meetup too. If you have any, you know...
It's not looking likely. We got 3 votes on that thing. We might do it. Maybe we can like join up with another Bitcoin meetup in the area, but it won't be CBP focused. But yeah, we're like I said, we're going to try and make another meetup happen in the summertime for sure. If we can fit it into our schedules. Absolutely.
And last and not least, we got a review from Cryptological on the Apple Podcasts app. So he writes or she writes, I'm not sure if it's he or she, but I enjoy this show because it agrees with my pre-existing financial views. Let's fucking go, LFG. So that's it. Yeah, that's it for my housekeeping. And we could just transfer right over to the stories if you want, Joey.
Let's rip it, man. I'm ready. Great picks from you today. Like I just tweeted, always getting me riled up in the lead up to the show. It's funny. Like I have so much to do during the day that I have limited time to process the stories and go through the notes. But man, I think my fingers are on fire. The stuff I was writing down. So I can't wait to get into this with you.
Oh,
right now.
Yeah. I know. I got a lot to talk about. So the first one is going to be a story about the health of the Canadian economy. And this is as a result of an article that I read from Castanet, and it was talking about StatsCan's retail numbers that came out for the month of March 2022. And it was noted in the article that the retail sales were coming in at around $60 billion for the month. And this is around the same number from February 2022, so there's no change month to month. This is really not good because estimates were expecting a 1.4 increase, so it being stagnant is not very good. Something to also note is volumes will be pulling back 1% month over month. Again, not very good. And moving forward, I guess in the past, but we're still waiting for this number to come out for April. They're expecting a 0.8% increase for the retail sales in April. But given how much they missed in March, we might have a contraction in April 2022 retail numbers once they come out.
Can I ask you before you keep going, an increase compared to what? Compared to what time period?
You're talking about the previous month.
So you like anyway, we'll get into this, but yeah, just so we're all on the same page when we start tearing this down.
The 60 billion was the reference point, and so February had around 60 billion as well. So they were expecting a 0.8% increase for April on that 60 billion, but I think it's going to be contraction if anything. That's just my opinion. And sales were also down in 6 of the 10 provinces. Quebec had the biggest decline. It's a minus 0.8% month over month. BC 0.5% in a negative, Saskatchewan 1.6 in a negative. So those three provinces really took it hard. So Alberta was leading the pack, going up 1.8%, but that's really it. Ontario 0.3 up, it's pretty much flat. And it's obvious to me that the economy is really not firing on all cylinders. And this is despite no hindrances due to closures due to COVID. And they're talking also of the Bank of Canada winding down QE and also ramping up QT, and we may be coming to an end of artificially pumping money into the economy to keep it afloat. And the markets and retail sales are going to start showing their true colors as they find their natural buoyancy without any intervention. And retail isn't the only things that are spinning their wheels. Economists are predicting that we've not that consumers will be altering their spending habits, because given the fact we've been talking about this some time on the show, Joey, and it's, you know, with less money coming in, or at least less purchasing power coming in, people are going to be less inclined to go out there and spend with less discretionary income, because they have less money that could be set aside for savings. And also that's going to be less money they could set aside for investment. So the mindset of these investors, or the people that actually are taking money from their paychecks, is they're going to change. And there's also resulting house price drops. It's going to cause the stock market to continually take a step back. The price of Bitcoin will potentially be impacted as well, as less money could potentially go into Bitcoin in the Canadian market. But then again, if they see the Canadian dollar get devalued, it might spur people to actually spend money to buy more Bitcoin. So it's a double-edged sword there. And also another industry that's impacted, due to high fuel cost, is tourism. And you may be able to find a killer deal now and again. I found some, but I didn't act on it. But as a whole, the price of airfares, they're going to continually go up. And it's not only airfares, but also people that want to travel by car are going to be impacted, as national gas price has officially topped $2 a liter. And there's a story I was reading on CBC is talking about there's less people willing to drive longer distances for tourism purposes because they can't afford it. And there's a new poll that was conducted by Ledger for the Tire and Rubber Association of Canada. Apparently, two-thirds of Canadian drivers surveyed said skyrocketing gas prices will likely force them to cancel or limit their road trips this summer. And tourism is an industry that has been beaten to a pulp the last few years due to shutdowns. And in my honest opinion, they're probably banking on making some real strong gains, real strong revenues this summer, but it may not tend to be the case here. And expect an increase in staycations as a way of circumventing the higher cost of fuel. People are going to more likely to stay home, and it's going to cost because it costs less money to do so. And it's going to be a snowball effect here, whereas the continued rolls downhill, it's going to create some problems with the economy. But it also brings me up to bankruptcies. Apparently bankruptcies are on the rise as Canadian government, their support and businesses deal with higher cost supply chain issues and labor shortages. The number of businesses that filed for insolvency in the first quarter of the year jumped 33.8% compared to 2021, according to the StatsCan. And these are the numbers released by the Office of the Superintendent of Bankruptcy Canada. I had no idea there was an Office of Superintendent of Bankruptcy Canada, but now I know. A total of 807 businesses filed for bankruptcy in the quarter, and that's up 10.1% from the previous 3 months. And while the numbers of businesses filing for bankruptcy is still slightly below pre-pandemic levels, 972 companies filed for insolvency in the first quarter of 2009. And this marks this rise marks a return to normal markets, says the Conference Board of Canada. And they're saying that the government, through COVID-19 pandemic, was helping delay the surge in bankruptcies because it, with CERB and whatnot. And according to the CFIB, that's the Canadian Federation of Independent Business, which has 95,000 members across the country, 65% of small businesses have taken debt through the pandemic, with the average debt reaching $160,000, Joey, $160,000. And at the same time, the group says 1 in 4, which small business owners, are seeing sales impacted by slow return to the office by downtown workers. This is a problem that's going to continue to move forward as less and less people are willing to go to the office. The CFIB is calling for Ottawa to forgive a large portion of the Canadian we'll be talking about this a little bit later. But lastly, we have also the Bank of Canada too. This week, they're expected to raise interest rates by another 50 basis points. On Wednesday, they're meeting, and it's going to be coming out, this decision. Well, they already met, and decision's coming Wednesday. This is going to potentially bring the lending rate to 1.5%. And already right now, the Canadian housing market has cooled. I could give you anecdotal evidence later on, but I'm going to pass this over to you shortly. Sales for homes are down everywhere. Sales prices are inching lower as well. We had an all-time high of $816,000 per sale of a home back in February. And in April, it's down to $746,000. That's about $60,000, $70,000 difference. So that's significant drop in terms of the home price sales. And it's going to go further down as they increase the rates another 50 basis points. That's expected this Wednesday. So passing it over to you, I have some more I could talk about, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. It's not looking very good moving forward with the Canadian economy, especially as they do more QT. It's going to be a wild ride.
So it's funny, you read the parts of the article that I have clipped here in my notes app, specifically that part about business bankruptcies and returning to normal markets. I've never heard bullshit like that before in my life, but let's start a little higher up. There's one thing that's not in this report, and it's something that we see for the States pretty often. And here, the sitting government likes to talk about the health of the consumer balance sheet. The thing about these consumer balance sheets, okay, and what they mean by that is how much cash do consumers have on hand compared to how much debt they have on hand? It's their sort of debt service level. It's all these different things that, you know, it's like the are you sleeping well at night index, basically. How much debt do you have? How much cash do you have? Is it manageable? And do you have like a way out? Can you see light at the end of the tunnel? The problem with that metric and the way it's portrayed by the media and governments alike, it's not just Canadian government does this. The American government does this too, to some fanfare these days, actually, on Bitcoin Twitter. The thing is that number, that debt number, is spread across every consumer, right? Mm-hmm. It's spread across every participant in the market. The fact of the matter is that most of the debt is held with people who can't repay it. That's why they took the debt in the first place. And so people are using their credit card more. It doesn't mean that they have more savings. It means that they're trying to save what little savings they have, and they're taking debt to make ends meet otherwise. These are not signs of a healthy economy. We've discussed the notion that falling house prices or the housing market cooling and interest rates going up is not quite the indicator that the Fed and GOC would like you to think it is, as far as like the policy is working, the policy changes are working. I know you said you had some anecdotal evidence. I'll tell you that, you know, I've said this on the show before too. I think this is probably demonstrably true. It would prove out if you had some time to really put these numbers together. The houses that are growing the most in value in the areas that are the most valuable are not slowing down. They're not slowing down because those people can afford to buy. They're not particularly constrained by an extra 50 basis points or 100 basis points or 150 basis points in their mortgage. And they're not, the fact of the matter is, no matter how high those prices go in those houses, they are unwilling to move to a lesser neighborhood, to a lesser home, to a lesser property. So yeah, there's going to be some properties that go down in price, but the properties that are already the highest are going to continue to skyrocket. And the properties that are cooling are not going to go down in price significantly to match the increase on the other side. And so that average is going to continue to rise. And what you're going to see as a result is the mobility of the middle class only start going one way. It's already been this way for some time, probably, but the middle class person who wants to upgrade their home is going to have a hard time doing it because these other sort of higher class, higher income earners have pushed the prices up so high while the price of their home has stagnated. And that's going to cause problems. This is going to cause unrest. It's going to cause, I think, poor voting patterns, which we'll get into shortly. And I think it's something we have to keep an eye out on, The inverse wealth effect, I tweeted this morning too, the inverse wealth effect is taking hold in the modern economies. Europe, North America, both seeing similar effects of the inverse wealth effect at the moment. One you mentioned is the home prices cooling for a lot of the middle class. And so what that means is that people are going to stop spending money on discretionary things. They're not going to buy, I don't know, new shirts, right? Like I can't even afford sleeves for my shirt today. That's how poor I am. You're going to have people who don't want to pay gas. Like you and I were just talking in our group chat, right? With some of the guys at work about going to the tahini's thing. The first thing somebody asks you, because it's a bit of a drive for you, is it really worth going? Because you're going to pay more in gas than the tahini's would have cost you. And they're probably right. Right? It's close. It's going to be close by the time all is said and done, especially if you get traffic. And so these things together cause discretionary spending patterns to contract. And when they contract, you have these other problems you're talking about, businesses going bankrupt. When businesses don't get discretionary spending, they have problems with their income. Now, I want to make note here of a quote from a guy named Ted Mallett. That's a great name, eh? For a guy who only has a hammer and thinks everything is a fucking nail, his last name's Mallett. What a fucking joke. He's the Conference Board of Canada's Director of Economic Forecasting. Truly, Len, this guy's a forecasting expert. You said that it marks a return to normal levels of insolvency for businesses. He's quoted in here saying if there hadn't been government support, then we would have seen many more bankruptcies right off the bat in the pandemic. What the fuck? Len, is he really telling me that he forecasted that he was going to return to pre-pandemic levels even after funneling all this money in during the pandemic? Wouldn't it have been better to not send inflation through the fucking stadium roof and just allow these things to go bankrupt anyway, if truly you had forecasted that this would happen after the pandemic anyhow, am I missing something there? Or is this like the most incredible admission of defeat from a public official that we've seen in basically months?
Not a public official. I don't think he's in the public coffers.
Conference Board of Canada.
That sounds like a private
economic forecasting.
Sounds like a private organization, if you ask me. But
okay, whatever. Sure. This has got to be one of the greatest admissions of like poor forecasting that I've ever fucking seen. Is it not?
Yeah. I mean,
who's involved in that decision? Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna get together when COVID starts, and we're gonna plan out what the next few months is gonna look like. We don't know how long COVID's gonna go, but we know that if we don't give these guys something, they're gonna hit a bump in the road that may cause insolvency or some other problem that causes them to shutter their doors. Fine. But if you're forecasting that you're gonna return to this at the end of the pandemic anyways, why would we not just allow it to happen right up front? I'm not saying it's good or bad or whatever. All I'm saying is that there's some ball was dropped here between the execution and the expected outcome, okay? Of this, there can be no doubt. Then there's another quote here that I think is amazing. Whether more companies will file for insolvency in the coming months remains to be seen, but Dan Kelly, the head of the Canadian Federation of Independent Business, says he expects the number of companies calling quits to continue to increase. So you said this too. We clipped literally the same parts of this article. It says that they're going to close more businesses. The expectation is that there's more businesses that are going to close because of the slower than expected return to normalcy combined with rising costs and debt coming due. There is now, I think, in my view, a grotesque and intentional effort on the part of many of these companies, research firms, journalists to say it's everything and everyone's fault except for the printer, except for the fiscal response. It's this lack of return to normalcy. It's all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. But no one's talking about the injection of cash, okay? How damaging this was. And I think, Len, that this is related to the story we're going to cover next. There is a clear desire for this level of cash injection to continue in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. Is there not? It seems to me that there is a push for this to continue in perpetuity. You're talking about debt jubilees. You're talking about free money forever. You're talking about refusing to acknowledge that fiscal policy played a role in inflation, continues to play a role in inflation, in my view, probably in your view as well. And to pretend that this is happening in a vacuum and has nothing to do with the fiscal response, the inflation is not related to fiscal response. It's related to slower than expected return to normal. Bro, everyone is fucking normal. I haven't put a mask on in months. I go to physiotherapy. It's the only place people are wearing masks. Everywhere else, I see lips, teeth, and ill-advised facial hair, okay? This is not a slowed return to normal. Everywhere else in the world, it's normal. If we really wanted to go back, if we really wanted to set our feet right as an economy, we could go back to normal right now, and we're not doing it, okay? So I don't want to hear this delayed return to normal shit anymore. A year ago, sure, I would have played ball with this, but now I'm not going to. There's too many other examples of this working other places. I don't know what else to say about this. This idea that, like, we're supposed to just accept that things are going to close their doors, small businesses can't survive, and the fix to this is more free money to combat what these guys are calling rising costs and debt coming due. I must be taking crazy pills. Am I not? Do you feel like you're taking crazy pills reading this stuff?
No, I've read some crazier things than this, Joey. Come on. The past 2 years, this is the craziest thing.
This is the period of time when it's so obvious that this is fucking so wrong. And still it's paraded around as the legitimate response, the legitimate explanation. It's completely insane. It's completely insane. And yet here we are on episode 62 or whatever, talking about, like, Len, this is a fire alarm moment, I think, for the country. We were talking about this before the show. Like, we got to start pulling the alarm here. We're entering into dangerous, dangerous territory, because the thing that we're seeing here is, I don't want to step on the toes of the next item, and maybe I'll stop right after this for that purpose, unless you want to add something else. But the thing that we're seeing here is a growing part of the population cannot survive on their current income. They need cash injections, and they'll vote for any kind of cash injection because the short-term pain is too great to consider the long-term pain if they accept that policy change. Once we get there, there's no turning back. There is no turning back, because these people are never going to vote for less free money. They're never going to vote for less support. They're never going to vote for less food on the table, less discretionary spending, less iPhones, less TVs, all that stuff. And yeah, man, like, unless you want to add something else, we may as well transition to the next story, because I think these things are as intertwined as two stories on this show have ever been.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. So the next topic is going to be about UBI. And we just talked about how the economy is suffering. And more there is the discussion of UBI. I'll be honest, I'm not sure if there's traction, but certainly there's more and more talk of UBI. We talked about this at length in previous episodes, so I'm not going to talk about the bills that are being run through the House of Commons or the Senate or anything else along those lines that we discussed previously. But with an provincial election in full swing here in Ontario, three of the parties have signaled that they are going to revive the basic income program that was shelved under Ford's PC government back in 2018. So the provincial Liberals, the provincial NDP, and the provincial Green Party, the Ontario wing of all three of those parties, they all want to bring back into effect the basic income that was shelved a few years back. And it, surprisingly to me, the Green Party is the one that is a strongest advocate of it, but they want to phase it in. And for those unaware, Ontario, we had a pilot project for basic income, and this was introduced back under the Wynne government. And I'm going to be referencing a Star article that Joy and I were talking about before the show. The Star interviewed somebody that was on this basic income program that was shelved, and she was praising it for it was elevating her income to $1,950, $15 a month, so $1,915 a month. And this was uplifting for her, and it was able her to plan beyond the current month. She was living month to month up until that point. And unfortunately, once the basic income program was shelved, her income was slashed by about 50%, and she went back on social assistance. And there's a lot of data to show how well a basic income program can or cannot work. So depending on how you look at it, between the Ontario pilot project CERB, which I'm going to call it as a pseudo UBI, there should be now enough data to determine what is the validity of this and how good or bad it's going to be for individuals and also for the economy as a whole. And you know, I don't mean to clump CERB into the basic income umbrella, but I'm just doing it in this case because there is some sort of connection. So right now, in terms of the election, it seems to be now UBI an election issue, and it might persuade some people to vote for one party over another. And just a reminder for everybody out there, June 2nd is election day. So do your civic duty, vote, because it only makes sense. I don't care who you vote for. It's just right to vote. People have died for our right to do so. But outside of Ontario, it looks like that there are pockets of UBI that's catching on. In fact, in PEI, there is support for all parties for the province for a province-wide, quote, basic income guarantee, end quote.
Holy fuck.
But the province wants, get this, Joey, the feds to fund it. So PEI wants to institute a basic income
guarantee. They want you and me to pay for it. They want you and me to pay for it.
Everybody to pay for it, not just everybody throughout Canada, which is amazing. They're using the message that introducing it to a small province will make it easier to manage. Yeah, I could see that, and potentially scale up as other provinces as they want to use it, and they could work out the kinks in PI. I can understand their rationale, but man, having everybody pay for it, that's a kick to the nuts. But let's talk about support for UBI. This is kind of shocking to me, Joey. And this is somewhat dated. This is an Angus Reid poll from 2020, but it goes to show me that there is support. In fact, 59% of the people support a UBI at some level of funding. 59% in 2020. And I would imagine that number's since gone up. Also, an Ipsos poll from 2021 shows that 57% of Canadians agree that there should be a basic income for all Canadians, regardless of employment. This is a different, but regardless of employment, they should get a UBI. I had no idea that there was this much support. And this is going to be a little bit further out there, but there was a poll that was done in the United States, and the poll shows that Americans with debt are under the impression that it takes 38 years to pay off their credit card debt, given how much they're paying for their credit card and the debt load they have. So I suspect that these numbers would be similar in Canada. And this type of information kind of lends itself that maybe UBI is going to be much more supported than I originally intended it, or I thought it would be. And so this is going to make something that's, you know, people don't really care about. They rather see it, you know, it's free money. Doesn't matter the cost. It's, you know, we just went through this experiment using the central bank to pay for everything. And now we're dealing with higher prices and people are pissed off. But what do you think is going to happen if you do the UBI experiment as well? And another thing that to note is personal savings right now. I should show this this chart here, but personal savings are at an all-time low in comparison to previous years. I'm going to just share this screen. How the heck do I do this? Give me a second, Joey. This is terrible, terrible audio quality.
Where's technical? Where's our producer? Where is?
You know what? I'll share the screen as you chat. But that's basically all I got to say is that the personal income right now is gone way down. See, it's we're in a ticking time bomb. People need to pay off their debt. People are they're carrying large amounts of debt. Their credit card is going to take them forever to pay off. There is support provincially on three of the four parties. There's a province out east that has all party support that would like to introduce it and have the feds pay for it. This is something that's coming out. It ties in well with also a CBDC. We'll be talking about that later on as well. But in just talking strictly of UBI, man, we are screwed, Joey. I think that it's something that is going to be coming. It's going to be passed on to us regardless if we want it or not. And we're just going to have to grin and bear it.
I honestly can't believe this. So a couple of things, right? There's this story where the woman they choose to, I guess, like be the beacon of hope for UBI. We'll get into her story in a bit, but like this comment, like my income was raised to $1,950 on UBI. And then when it was slashed, I had to go back on social assistance. Do these people have any idea how dumb they sound? Do they have any idea, Len? UBI is social assistance. Okay. When you go back on social assistance, the money is coming from like the same place, basically. Okay. You're on ODSP in Ontario. If you have a disability, fine. If you have like some other problem, there's many different ways to get government assistance. Some of those things are valuable to certain populations. I understand that. UBI is not, in my view, the same as these programs, because UBI is a free ride for people who would otherwise be incentivized to better their situation.
Take a look at the chart I just shared.
What is this of? What is this chart?
It's the U.S. personal savings as a percentage to disposable income.
We talk about this all the time. These different ratios
just got slashed there, and it's
a complete inversion. It is a complete inversion over the last 2 years.
And look what happened in the beginning of 2020. It spiked and then all of a sudden, like over time, it got eroded. So yeah, not looking good. So
what can you say, right? And so, you know, this other thing, like Angus Reid doing the polling for UBI, truly, like, you have to kind of nitpick this, but I think it's a valid point. Do you know what Angus Reid uses as an incentive to get people to take their polls?
They give out gift cards.
They pay. Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm not saying that everyone who takes gift cards for polling is in a desperate situation, but certainly, Len, you are really leaning on a certain subsection of the population. You think that's fair to say?
I do it, man. I don't think
I'm not saying, hey, Len, maybe you're not destitute, okay? I've only ever seen that wall. I don't know what the rest of your place looks like. But, you know, assuming you're not living in a shed somewhere, you know, some people do these things because they want the gift card. But I would guess, Len, that a lot of people keep an eye on the Angus Reid website and try and get involved in these polls because they want the free shit. And maybe in some cases they need the free shit. And that is going to get you a certain portion of the population that votes a certain way, polls a certain way, all this stuff, right? Something to consider in the grand scheme. I don't think this is that controversial. Other thing there, tourist provinces have the highest support for UBI. Of course they do. No one can afford to travel. Now that everything's open, people still can't go there to spend money because one, maybe they don't have the shot, right? Which is one problem. Two, maybe they can't get a negative test if they're positive or recently positive. Three, they're still worried about COVID. Four, they can't afford the plane ticket because gas and fuel costs are through the roof. They can't go there because five, they're paying too much to heat their home because of the inflation caused by fiscal injections, monetary injections. Like these things are all like a sick flywheel of bad decisions, and it just keeps spinning and it's just accelerating. It's just getting bigger. The vortex is just getting more pull. All these things to consider, right? I mentioned that people with disabilities can get UBI. It's called ODSP in Ontario. There's other stuff as well that are, you know, helping. This Torstar article, like, is sort of peak stupid in my view. There's talks about people with interests in the arts, for example, like artists can get special kinds of UBI, like focused UBI. What? Wait a minute. What did you just say? If artists want to get paid, They should produce something people want to buy or pay for, or a service that people value. I'm not interested in paying a shitty artist to make shitty art that they can't sell. Are you? Are you interested in that?
We kind of already do that right now, but yeah, I don't want to do it anymore.
Len,
if you can't cut it, come on, you don't deserve.
Like, okay, we're like, for example, let's take our podcast, right? You and me spend a lot of time on this fucking show. We do research. We're talking to each other constantly. My wife is so mad at me Saturday morning when we haven't spoken to each other basically all week. And on Saturday morning, what do you think I'm doing? I'm listening to podcasts about the economy on the couch while I'm playing video games and having a coffee. Like, this is like, it's constant. It's a constant flow of information. We're lucky to have a sponsor for this show. But are you telling me that if we didn't, we would just go knock on the door of the government and say, hey, can you sponsor my art that no one wants to pay for or watch or listen to? Are you really telling me that's a good idea? There is no world in which that could be construed as a good idea. Economically, from an incentives point of view, for the government, for the average citizen, or even for the artist, what incentive does the artist have to get better if we're just paying them for stickman doodles? Len, what are we talking about? If no one wants to watch your interpretive dance, your interpretive dance solo performance, why should I have to pay? Why should I have to pay? It's insane, man. It's insane.
I agree.
It's completely insane. Artists don't need this. The test case in the article, it's very light on details for the woman they are showcasing, putting front and center. Did you find that as well? It's a little light on details. Well, what does she do? Len, what does she do for work? What does she do for work?
Oh, they didn't mention it. And I forgot exactly.
Not in any great detail. So,
right.
So it doesn't tell you what exactly she does.
They did kind of say what her vocation is. I mean, in a very general sense.
Yeah. Do you know why?
It wasn't enough that it stuck in my head.
Let me tell you something about general compared to specific. Okay. When you can be specific and really hammer home your point with specifics, you do it. We do that on the show. We got charts. We got numbers. We talk about the things that we're reading. We talk about things that we're hearing. We talk specifics. Okay. The reason we talk specifics is because it supports the point that we're making. We don't just shoot the shit and talk about anecdotes and make shit up for an hour and a half every week and then talk about what we watched on TV after that. We talk about specifics because without specifics, you can't make a coherent argument that sticks. The reason Torstar is not using specifics is because the person they chose is a flop, man. She's a flop, okay? She doesn't have a good job. They talk about how she's going to go to college. What do you think she's going to take, Len? Do you think... We've spoken a lot on the show about the value of education and what it's gotten you. Do you think that UBI is going to drag her from the depths of poverty that she claims to be in? Or do you think that even after she gets whatever vocational certificate that she's pursuing at post-secondary level, do you think she's still going to need more help? Because, Len, I'll tell you, I'm not a betting man, but I would put a lot of money on one of those two outcomes, and I know that you know which one it is. Okay.
I'm not going to answer it.
Yeah. I'm not going to answer it either because I'm not that kind of. It's a rhetorical question. Okay? Like, it's ridiculous. This person is going to need more help. Let's talk about this other poll. This poll of what do Canadians think about the pandemic? I'll tell you what they think and why they think it. Do you know when the poll was conducted, Len?
2021?
During the pandemic, 2019 and 20, or 2020, I should say.
Okay.
So, majorities support programming for $10,000, $20,000, or $30,000 per person. The majority agrees that the wealthy should fund the program. Just one quarter of those with the highest household incomes willing to pay more. Half say the Canadians could afford UBI, half disagree, and Canadians are divided over the incentive to work under UBI. Now look, we've said this before. This idea of the wealthy paying for things is a trap, okay? It's like that meme with the Star Wars guy. It's a trap. It's a trap. The people with the highest income level, with the most mobility, be it physical, social, economic, whatever, okay, and the most means to hide and protect their income, they are never going to pay for this. They are never going to allow the government to take another chunk of their money above and beyond. I think at 100,000, what's the tax rate? 35% or 40%? Might even be higher than that now. Above 100,000, they're never going to allow that to grow substantially enough to fund a program like this. So what's going to happen is the sitting government at the time this program is enacted going to draw back the program, stop paying everybody their $10,000, $20,000, or $30,000? $30,000 a fucking year. Insane. Are they going to stop paying that? Or is it more likely that they're going to drop the definition of wealthy to capture more of the tax base. If everyone is voting for this because they want the free money, and we assume, I think correctly, that people who vote for this the first time and start taking the free money are not going to suddenly be okay with it going the other direction or vote for a party who doesn't want to do this. The logical next step and the incentives point to that wealthy bracket growing in size and also dropping into a lower altitude as far as income per person. So these things are, you know, they're destructive to the middle class in more ways than one, right? You're going to have people trying to hide their income to stay out of this bracket. You're going to have people trying to claw money that maybe they don't need because the incentive exists. And at the end of the day, the middle class is the one who's hurt the most. Like I said, the highest income earners are not going to be touched. They're leaving. They're not going to participate. They'll either hide the money overseas. They'll hide it in equity. They'll hide it in capital. They'll do whatever. And as the laws become more, there's a term for this that I really want to use, and I'm not going to. As the laws become more likely to interfere with their personal affairs, they're leaving. They're not going to hang around. Okay, that's a problem. And Len, it's not fair for us to keep talking about this and not just call it what it is. This is a vote buying scheme. It's a vote buying scheme. That's all this is. Anyone who talks about equality, or we can help children with this, or there's people on disability who would be on this instead, it's garbage. It's garbage. And these programs are meant to do one thing and one thing only. They're meant to buy votes. And those votes, Len, are going to be very, very, very low churn if this kind of thing passes. These people will never vote another way. They'll never vote for the program to shrink. They'll never vote for a party who doesn't want to do it. And we'll be stuck with this. And it will continue to expand because, as I pointed out, this is the nature of these programs. They have to expand to keep themselves afloat. And what do you get from that? You get inflation, you get increased demand, and worse, as if we haven't just seen this all over the world. If less people want to work in jobs that are widget producing jobs, what do you get? You get less widgets for more money. It's not that hard to figure this out. And again, a year and a half ago, Len, we could have had a decent debate about what this is going to look like because we didn't know exactly how long lasting the inflation would be. We didn't know exactly what the supply chain would look like. We didn't know. Now we fucking know. We know. So why are we still talking about this? This should be shouted down, okay? People who support UBI and all this stuff, we should be putting tags in their ears like some kind of fucking endangered turtle and checking on them in 15 years to see if they're still around, to see what they think, to see if they came to their senses. This is not a sustainable policy. In any sense of the word sustainable, and I just am so tired of having this conversation with people who don't seem to understand that it's coming for you. It's coming for you at some point. It's either coming for you through inflation, through increased taxes, through the bracket that is sought after entering into your bracket, which, by the way, I didn't even mention that if this happens and inflation goes up, your salary is going to go up too. And you're eventually going to get captured in this. The downward pressure is going to come your way and your salary inflation is going to push up. You're going to be in the net, okay? You're going to be just another shrimp in the fucking fishing net for these UBI programs and you're going to be stuck. And then what? You don't have the means to move if you get stuck in the net. Trust me on that. You're not going to be one of these guys who jet sets and takes his job on the road. It ain't going to be you. So think about this when you vote. Think about this when you talk to people. And man, take it seriously, because we've been talking about this on the show, and some of you in the chat have said this in the last year, that I'm overreacting and that voting block is never going to get big enough and it's never going to get enough popularity. Well, here we are now. Even with the poor examples of how badly this can go, still it's gaining traction. Still it's finding footing, and still it's showing up in major publications. Now you tell me, am I worried too much or have you not been worried enough? Because I think that the opposite is true, Len. And I'm really concerned about this, especially because I'm pretty young. Like, do I really want to go through this for the next 30 years? No way, man.
I could tell you why you wouldn't.
There's enough problems. Like, I don't want to deal with this too.
I could tell you why you wouldn't, because we talked about this at length in a previous episode, and I still have the numbers here. And it was the parliamentary budget, whatever it was. I'll find out who was. Parliamentary Budget Officer. They came out with this report back in 2021, and they were using the 2017 Ontario UBI pilot project as the basis of this study. And through their study, the Parliamentary Budget Officer is it's arm's length. It runs without any political interference. So it does its thing. And this is,
you should mention that this is often referred to as the PBO in different texts and documents, articles, stuff like that. So if you're wondering, that's what that is.
Just the P. So they're doing their thing. And even though there may be a particular government in power, they're not there to influence the PBO. So the PBO has released this back in 2021. And they said through their report that a GBI would eventually cost the Canadian government expenses $423 billion over per year over time. And so $423 billion, that's a heck of a lot of money. Sorry, that's my mistake.
Okay, one other thing while you're on this topic.
$85 billion to $93 billion. Sorry, that's
that was the estimate, right? That was the estimate.
Len,
where do they get that number from? Like, look at the numbers that they're polling here: 10, 20, or 30,000 per person. How is it only $88 billion? Where are they getting that? That's wrong.
They're using the pilot project from the Ontario basic income. Not everybody was available to get it, so maybe they were using that and extrapolating it over a larger area. But what I'm trying to get at is they were saying this is going to cost $85 to $93 billion, and Canada's expenses back in 2019 and 2020 was $423 billion. So just the UBI program was going to be about 25% of all the total expenses Canada has to dish. So you're talking about healthcare, you're talking about paying for military, you're talking about doing anything. 25%, one in every $4 would be dedicated to UBI. That's insane. It's unsustainable.
And that number, like, this is the other, like, it's okay. I don't want to continue to just bulldoze this stupidity, but I have no choice because it keeps showing up in the notes for the show. The UBI, if we had UBI 2 years ago, let's say, okay, we had a program where $800 a month went to the people who needed it most, whatever that qualifier is.
You're defining CERB.
Yeah. Okay. So Len, I don't want to say it's CERB. Let's say it's UBI. Let's say it's a monthly $800 program. How much is that program today? Is it still 800?
No, everything has to go up because costs go up.
It has to go up because costs go up, and costs go up because of those programs. Now, if you say that they wouldn't increase it, look at the whining from the ODSP recipients. These guys are on fixed income for a disability, and they're telling you that now through their, through their channels of transmission to government, that they can't afford to live on the ODSP that was working for them 2 years ago. What the fuck do you think is going to happen with UBI? It's going to be the same.
It's going to be worse. It's because the stakes are higher.
Unreal, man. We're still talking about this. And so one more thing, and then you can take over. We talk on the show about the lowest common denominator, okay? This is why you have to be concerned about the lowest common denominator. This is what it means when you discuss the tyranny of the majority. Okay. If the majority of people are so destitute, so poor, so worried about the short term that they're willing to make poor decisions at the poll, like voting for UBI, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do. Democracy will fail you, person who got a job, got an education, took it on themselves to find ways to make money. They will come for you. Okay. When AOC wears that dress that says like eat the rich or whatever,
tax the rich.
I may as well say eat the rich, I guess. But like you are the rich, man. You are the rich. It's not someone in an ivory tower whose name you don't know who wears a Gucci suit every day. It's you. And you got to realize that. Anyway, sorry, Len. Go ahead.
Now, there are people that are on social assistance like ODSP, or in this case, if they get a UBI, that will benefit from it because they need it for just through circumstances. I don't want to paint everybody with the same brush because there are people just due to crappy circumstances, they have very, very little chance and it's so difficult to elevate 100%, themselves.
100%.
So I hope that those people would be able to get it. I don't think the vast majority of UBI.
We already have programs for those people, Len. Mm-hmm. Like there's already social programs for those people.
Yeah.
I work with vulnerable populations through Wayside, right? So like I've been on that board for a few years. I know how much the province tries to get people to take up those programs. I know how much the province tries to support places like Wayside and other institutions like ours. I know how hard it is because the bureaucracy is like, you know, all entangling and this maze of red tape and approvals and letter writing and grant recipients and things of that nature. I know all this, but those programs exist and there's avenues to get them. if we really want to help people, clean up the stuff that's there already. Let's see if it works. If it doesn't work, even after you clean it up, the solution is not adding more garbage to the pile. Okay. If you get a flaming pile of tires in your backyard, Len, you don't put it out by throwing more rubber on the fucking fire. You know what I mean? But it seems to me that all we want to do is throw more rubber on the fire.
What do you do with your used tires? I burn them, man. I throw them
in the park near my house at night. I bring them down in the middle of the night, throw them in the forest. I
do the Simpsons style, throw it over the fence and let Arby's take care of it. Yeah,
exactly. this drives me nuts, man. And I appreciate that this is an important subject. And I hope that I know you appreciate it. Listener, viewer, I hope you appreciate it too. Take this to heart because this is coming, man. There's an election in Ontario in like 4 days, 3 days, whatever it is. And that vote, I'm not going to talk about whether I'm voting for Ford or voting for whoever else, Del Duca or whoever else is running. But I'll tell you that if Ford loses that election, the rampant spending you're going to see is going to blow your mind. It's going to blow your mind. So pay attention for sure.
I'll take a different approach to this. Just go out there and vote. I don't care who you vote for. I don't care if this or that or whatever. Just go out and vote because it is you've been given this opportunity. Not everywhere in the world do you have this ability to vote for somebody that's going to be representing you. Just do it. It just only makes sense. So that's it for the A Block, Chewy, unless you want to roll down.
I'm done.
Somewhere.
I'm done. I need a cough drop after that.
There's
my
more.
COVID's starting to pop up here. My throat's getting a little tickle.
Let's go to the Canadian stories. First thing, we'll talk about Ledin, and they just released their rates for June 1st. So starting June 1, the rates remain the same. There's not much. There's zero change whatsoever. So balances up to 0.1 BTC will earn 5.25% APY, and balances beyond that are going to earn 2% APY, and interest on USDC stays 7.5% APY on all USDC deposits. So there you go. No change in the Ledin rates for the month of June. For better or for worse, it is. So I'm not sure if you want to talk about that, but that is noteworthy in my opinion.
I like Ledin. I use Ledin. I know Bitcoin All Caps was here earlier. He was giving me shit on one of these shows a while ago about giving up, my keys for the loan, the interest-bearing account. I don't think it's a bad way to park a little Bitcoin. Honestly, I encourage people to do it. We've encouraged it on this show before, and I don't see that stopping anytime soon. So, I'm happy to see the rates are staying the same. I think we talked to. Was it you that talked to those guys at an event and they were saying that there's like a pretty fluid metric and measuring stick they use to change those rates every month. So I have like pretty reasonable faith in those guys that if they can make the rate higher, they will. And so I'm not worried that they're ever stiffing me for the sake of the business. Like I know they have to make money too, but I think they're pretty good at finding a median. And I'll note that they're really doing a lot better than BlockFi. BlockFi's rates are like my savings account at the bank now. So, you can't really say much about that. They're doing a pretty good job. Let's hope it keeps up.
Yeah, and you can see with all the FUD surrounding Celsius, Ledin is it's not getting the same type of treatment. In fact, Corey Clipston, who's the one that's leading the charge for the Celsius FUD, he even said if you could use something else like Ledin, he specifically said that is because the transparency is much greater with Ledin than it is Celsius. You know what your funds are going into.
Celsius does new proof of reserves, obviously. Ledin does proof of reserves, I think, once a quarter, once every or twice a year, something like that, right? And they send you specifically the hash for your POR segment, and can't beat that. Plus, it's funny in this like web of these revelations about like Coinbase and Celsius now too, talking about any funds that you have in the program maybe seized if we go bankrupt or something like that, right? And Ledin has this thing in their documents that it's the opposite. If they do have a problem with insolvency or something and your funds are there, you're among the first people paid out. So great. I understand the risk you're taking, but I think that risk is lower and lower and lower and lower. And yeah, to Liam's point in the chat, the mobile app could be better. You should tweet Mario that, Liam. I would agree with that. We need a better Ledin.
I'll give you some inside information here. It is being worked on. I spoke to the owners Maurizio and Adam. It's about a month and a half ago of one of the Tahini's event, and they did say that this is something that they're working on and is going to be coming out. So I don't think I'm spilling the beans too much here, because the mobile app is lackluster, but they're working on it to improve it. So there you go. And only put on Ledin that's something that you're willing to lose. It's not like you will be losing it, but really just something that you could, you know, that you'll be sleeping good at night. You don't want to put something like people did with Luna, and they're losing sleep because they can't take it off the Anchor protocol. Whatever you put on Ledin, make sure it's something that you're comfortable with, because that way you can still sleep at night and earn some sort of interest on whatever you put on there. That's just my opinion.
I love it, man. Yeah. You use it. I use it. I know a bunch of you guys in the chat use it. I've gotten messages from a few of you saying how much you like it. So, yeah, man, good stuff. Good stuff. Glad to hear this. Rates staying the same.
So let's move on to the former Bank of Canada governor, David Dodge.
Sure. And
he was talking about gold.
Can we talk about another great name there? We had Mallet earlier. Now you got a Bank of Canada Dodge. Outstanding. Anyway,
he doesn't drive a Dodge like Albert.
No, but I'm sure he's dodging questions. I'm not sure of that.
But in this case, no, he wasn't. He was taking it head on. He was saying that gold is an antique instrument, and he believes Canada's central bank got rid of gold reserves for that very reason. He says, despite saying that gold is outdated financial tool, he says that the leading crypto asset, Bitcoin, has no place in the Bank of Canada reserves. And so the Bank of Canada sold most of their golds in up to 2016. They started, I think, in 2002. So for the next 14 years, they slowly sold off all their gold. And I think 2016 was the last time they sold anything. And that was as per finance department spokesperson David Barnaby. And he says that the decision to sell gold was not tied to a specific gold price, and sales are being conducted over a long period of time and in a controlled manner. He says the government has a long-standing policy of diversifying its portfolio by selling physical commodities such as gold, and instead of investing in financial assets that are easily tradable and have deep markets of buyers and sellers. He's thinking that David Dodge says that he doesn't believe Bitcoin is something that they should be adding to the balance sheet. Fine, I'm with that. I don't understand, though. Like, if you're talking about a financial asset that's easily tradable and have deep markets of buyers and sellers, that's Bitcoin. I don't understand, but he's kind of a no-coiner to me, if you ask me. Canada is really the only G7 nation that doesn't have any gold reserves, and that's kind of scary in a way, I would say. They're basically, instead of holding gold, they're holding on to US or Chinese or Euro bonds, as they're trying to get yields on a return. And he's happy with that. It sounds like he's a DeFi guy, if you ask me. So all in all, it makes me wonder, like, they have no desire to add Bitcoin to their balance sheet. They like holding US, Chinese or European bonds. They're happy with the fact they sold gold. And furthermore, he's talking about the issuance of a digital currency is a very important issue. He says that globally, Canada needs to reduce its transaction cost. And he says the Department of Finance and the Bank of Canada are working hard of issuing a digitalization of the financial system to reduce transaction cost. And he's saying it's something that's very important to digitize the Canadian dollar, CBDC. We talked about UBI earlier. This CBDC fits in so well in that environment, because you could direct funds to any particular group of people however you wish. And you could, for example, you mentioned the artist, they could get more money, and it's easily done in a programmable currency like this. So this is scary stuff. Read between the lines. David Dodge is not a dummy. He's got some clout still. He was the Bank of Canada governor in the past, and he's talking about a CBDC. He's talking about not investing in gold. He's talking about investing in bonds, which who knows what's going to happen moving forward. This is scary stuff. Be very concerned, especially when you tie this shit with a UBI. Oh, man.
I just don't know. I just don't know. Like, it's amazing. Like, you know, Dodge has the audacity to say that he's going to reduce the transaction costs with digitization. Transaction costs for who? I'm going to be paying with my privacy. I'm going to be paying with my cash no longer being accepted or being frowned upon. I'm going to be paying through inflation when they target artists with free money. Artists. I still can't believe that I read that. And you know, he knows.
I know. I'm an artist. I want free money, too.
Yeah, like, okay. I know. You should see. I draw stuff on napkins all the time at restaurants. Some people would argue that I'm one of the best napkin artists out there. But anyway, story for another time. I've also painted the porcelain after coming back from a restaurant. I'm another
but Joy, real Picasso. If you identify yourself as the greatest artist that ever lived.
Oh, here we go. Let's go down that road. Maybe we can get banned while we're at it from YouTube. So I see all this stuff. I get why he wants to do it, but it really, like, for him to talk about how Bitcoin is like not a liquid market. What? Bitcoin is not a liquid market. It might be the most liquid market in the world.
Right.
It might be. Like, it's traded 24/7. There's never been think about this, like Celsius or not Celsius. Sorry. I'm getting my shitcoin scams mixed up here, but Terra Luna sold like 80 billion in Bitcoin. It was a guaranteed sell and the price didn't go to zero. Like, everyone in another market, if there was that much guaranteed downward pressure coming, everyone would just sell to try and get in lower and try and get some profit out of that trade. Right. But in Bitcoin, I mean, it absorbed, I think, pretty masterfully that entire downward pressure, or that entire like sum of downward pressure. So anyway, all this to say that, like, again, Len, you know, if I wanted to hear, a silver-haired octogenarian's take on digital money, I would honestly prefer to watch Warren and Charlie. At least they made a fortune for themselves and really, you know, hustled to make it happen. I'm not interested in hearing a bureaucrat's take. I hear it too often. I don't care. I don't care. We should just laugh these people out of the room.
This guy, he was obviously a very important person when he was the governor of the Bank of Canada, but he was also the Bank of Canada governor during a very unique moment. He was also there in 2008. So that was a time where there was financial turmoil.
There's another policy mistake that we still haven't, you know, faced up to, that we kicked the can down the road for 14 years for. Great. That's just what I need. Like, I'm going to try and parse my words here. But it's very clear that we're rewarding the wrong decisions over and over again at the highest levels when it comes to economic response. And we're seeing the results. That's all. We're seeing the results. Nothing surprising about these things, right? About the opinion, about the unwillingness to admit the mistake. Okay. There you go. Have fun. Great.
Let's move on, Joey. I got to actually, this story here, a little bit more lighthearted, depending on how you look at it. The person that was scammed.
I'll do my best. Let me do my best to darken this up after you.
All right. So there was a Bitcoin scam that cost a Kitchener resident $22,000. It was reported back on May 24th that when this person was trying to access their bank through a website, a pop-up appeared and it was requesting their social insurance number. And he gave the information, which obviously is not the right thing to do. He was later called by somebody claiming to be working for the government, and with the expectation that the guy on the phone was trying to protect the bank account. So he was told the person to withdraw the money from an ATM. So this person did. They withdraw the money from an ATM and deposit it into a Bitcoin ATM. The caller told the victim to not tell anyone that he worked for the government, saying he was trying to catch people in money laundering situations here by depositing money from the ATM. Sorry, withdrawing money from the ATM and depositing it into the Bitcoin ATM. It was going to help him catch some money launderers, which is absolutely hilarious to me. $22,000 this dude lost, or gal. I'm not sure who it is. But anyways, yeah, be very careful. And anybody ask you your SIN number and shit like that, obviously don't give it up. And this is giving Bitcoin a bad rap, these scams, because it's so easy for these people just to be duped and they'll give up anything, it seems. Their social insurance number without even batting an eye, that's nuts. So yeah, I thought it was kind of funny. I'm sure this person didn't find it all that hilarious. 22K is not a small amount of money, but I guess nowadays you could probably just buy a Happy Meal, but still, it took quite a long time to save it. Anyways, that's the story I have. I thought that it was it was pretty funny, but yeah.
You know, Len, in an alternate universe, okay, in an alternate string theory reality, this person is going to be on stage in the year 2025, 2026, when the one world government announces that Bitcoin is banned because of consumer protection issues. And they're going to parade this guy or gal out there and say, look, John Doe, Jane Doe lost $22,000 because of Bitcoin. But they're not going to mention that they, you know, took a call from a random number, withdrew all the money from their bank account, put it all into a Bitcoin ATM, and then did you say they sent it over to that person after? Like, they just gave it away?
They took it from the bank ATM and deposited it into a Bitcoin ATM.
Right.
So wherever
right.
it went at that point, they gave the address and it's gone. I'm like, waiting for the Netflix series to come out.
This is the person who the OSC wants to protect from Bitcoin. There's no protecting this person. This person shouldn't leave the house. They shouldn't get out of bed without a helmet on. You know what I mean?
This person needs the help of the OCS.
Really. We can't help these people. You know, like we can't do it. Len, this guy, you know, he crosses the street when the hand is flashing. I can't help this man. It's not my problem to help this man. if you're a hand flashing crosser, like power to you, but like, you know, if the bumper makes contact with your hip, don't come looking to me. We're not going to ban cars over this, sir. Like, but this is what they're talking about. And it's funny because we've seen this already, right? Like all this financial consumer protection and stuff like that. It's like it's just an expanding net catching all the fish, right? And pretty soon we're going to get wrapped up in that if we're not already sort of in the net and just don't know. So, you know, funny story, Len, but is it that funny? I don't know. It's like predictive, prescriptive almost more than anything.
Anyways, let's move on to the rest of the news. I want to talk about Central African Republic, and they are going to be launching a Bitcoin investment hub, and that's as per Reuters, and it's called the Sango Crypto Hub, which is pretty funny because the World Bank, after they heard this, they signaled they're not going to be supporting this thing. And it makes me wonder, I'm going to get to that in just a moment, but it makes me wonder when you're talking the Sango Crypto Hub, and BTC Gandalf has been theorizing that potentially they might be releasing a shitcoin. So I'm going to wait to see what happens because I'm not going to hold my breath here. Anything is on the table. And this is a crypto initiative that's being called, and it's going to be a legal hub for crypto-related businesses encompassing economic policies, including no corporate or income taxes and the creation of a virtual and physical crypto island. The Sango project states that the country received approval for $35 million in development fund from the World Bank for the digitization of the public sector. So they took this $35 million from the World Bank and they're going ahead with
this. They're building the central land with it, basically.
It's fucking classic that they're doing this. But anyways, the World Bank, they heard about this and told Bloomberg that they're pissed off. And of course, they didn't give this money with the initiative of funding the Sango project. I love it that the fact that they took this money from the World Bank and they're going to go ahead with it. But I have some real questions here. The Sango project, they're saying they're going to make a physical crypto island. I took a look at the map of the Central African Republic. I could not see a large body of water big enough to host an island, or there's already an existing island. So I'm not exactly sure where this physical island will be located. I don't think it's going to be within the borders of the Central African Republic as we know it in Africa. Furthermore, this is something I had no idea. The country has an internet penetration rate of just over 7% of the total population. That is incredibly low. And this is information from Data Report Out dated January 2022. So it's relatively recent information. 7% of the total population has internet penetration. That's incredibly low. I'm not sure how well any sort of Bitcoin adoption is going to work over there, given that this, I don't know, maybe I'm skeptical, but I do like the fact that they gave the middle finger to the World Bank by taking the money and going ahead with some sort of crypto thing. So great. Some good, some bad. Who the heck knows what's going on there?
I don't like the way Central African Republic is going. I think I'm going to revert to Central Africa Republic Classic, I think, once this fork happens and they go to Crypto Island or whatever they're doing. Like this is why you got to be careful with countries that are on the Gold Machine Gun Index, because they didn't just magically appear on the Gold Machine Gun Index. They are corrupt. They are dishonest. And it seems to me that, like, it's funny, you know, they basically said, give what back with the 35 million, you know, to quote the famous Simpsons line. Was it Fidel Castro who steals like $1 million bill from Homer Simpson on a canoe? Give what back?
What bill?
Yeah. So like they basically did that to the San World Francisco's Bank, which is pretty full jokes.
Of what?
Yeah, it's pretty jokes, right? So we got that going on. But like, Len, a place with 7% internet penetration is not going to benefit from a digital like Bitcoin crypto island, but I'll tell you who will: the guys with gold machine guns. So, you know, again, careful where you put your chips. I think you and I have been pretty good on this show about being careful about, you know, who we really get behind. And, you know, like you'll notice we haven't printed any t-shirts to support El Salvador, and doesn't sound like Carr is going to get any t-shirts either, but I should say, my wife is working on a gold machine gun t-shirt that'll be in the merch store sometime soon. So maybe you guys can buy that. I think I might buy one. That'll be the first shirt I get from the merch store, the gold machine gun index shirt. Anyway, great. I mean, if you looked on the map, Len, you didn't see any water, then I'll take your word for it. And we probably got a scam on our hands. That's all I'll say.
So we have a politician from the Dominican Republic called Ciprian Reyes. And this was some, I got this information from Jaime Garcia. And he was saying that Ciprian is Dominican and he is running and he wants to have the same governance model as El Salvador. So you're just talking about El Salvador. Looks like the Dominican Republic, this politician wants to have this, the governance model put in place in the Dominican Republic as well. So unsure, reading between the lines, could it be potentially Bitcoin in the waiting for Dominican Republic? Not exactly sure, but he also talks that he wants to have zero corruption. He doesn't tolerate corruption whatsoever. And he's looking at Bukele with dazed eyes. He calls him an esteemed president. So I like this. I'm not sure exactly how this transpires, but Jaime, he's thinking that this might be some sort of Bitcoin talk. If you read between the lines, I'm not exactly sure what's going on here, but Dominican Republic would be cool. Let's bring them on. Good baseball, good food, and if they could get some Bitcoin on there, it's good economy too.
I do like the DR, so I'm happy about this story, and I can't wait for the next follow up in 6 weeks about the Dominican Republic crypto island and 7% internet penetration.
They already are on an island. They're not going to make it.
No, they're having a new crypto island right in there. There's a new one. Can't you see it on the map? Check the map. Pull up
Island Squared
map tab or something.
Did you hear about Francis? Is this Francis Suarez?
Oh no!
I forget his first name. Is it Francis?
The Miami mayor, yeah.
Yeah. So he was at the event in Davos, the WEF event. So he's talking about. I don't know. It's funny that the fact he's over there. I think he's one of the delegates. Why he was there, I don't know. What the heck is he doing? Is he shilling the Miami coin? But he's fallen very far from grace since last year. First Miami coin, now, you know, rubbing shoulders with the people at the WEF. Oh man, it's a sad state of affairs, if you ask me.
What do you think would be better for his popularity going forward? Rubbing shoulders at the WWF or rubbing shoulders at the WEF?
If you're talking about the current WWF or the WWE,
what is it called now? The wrestling
WWE.
Let's get that guy. Like this should be the redemption arc for all sort of fallen souls, right? It should be the Rodman redemption arc. You should go through a difficult period after you sort of hit peak popularity and then redeem yourself by joining Hulk Hogan and Razor Ramon and, you know, getting in the ring with a bunch of famous wrestlers and going through like a Monday Night Raw event. And then from there, it's all back uphill. I'll forgive the Miami coin thing if he does a cage match with, I don't know, I can't even name a single current wrestler, but one of them. Someone popular, hopefully. So then maybe I'll watch. Maybe I'll
Brock
watch.
Lesnar still there?
Brock Lesnar is probably like 50 years old, man.
I don't know.
I doubt he's still there. Fun fact, Brock Lesnar is on, he's in Madden 2008. Did you know that?
Yeah, I was going to say that. That guy tried out for the Vikings as an offensive lineman with...
Defensive lineman, D-tackle.
Defensive?
D-tackle.
I thought it was off.
Yeah.
D-tackle. With very little training whatsoever. He just basically walked on. And was he cut late in the preseason?
So he must have made at least the preseason roster.
That's insane. That's...
Great athlete.
Man was talented, yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe not many more because, as you say, he's 50. But, okay, Paraguay, they just passed a Bitcoin mining bill. And due to inexpensive electricity and crypto-friendly environment, Paraguay has historically been viewed as a mining haven for mining operations. And this bill is trying to make Paraguay a mining hub. And they're trying to get make this an international hub for miners because, obviously, the low energy. And it's around 5 cents per kilowatt hour. And that's the lowest in Latin America. And this new legislation will require Bitcoin exchanges to register their business, as well as Bitcoin miners need to register them as for drawing electricity from the grid. So I'm not sure if this is a good or bad thing, but I mean, it's something that is just been came out. And I think this is going to impact a lot of businesses that wants to move into Paraguay and mine Bitcoin. But I know of one company that's doing it right now. So one company is Bitfarms. They don't have a big data center in Paraguay, but they do have a sizable one at the very least that's full of S9s. They move their older equipment down there. So yeah, I'm not sure this is good or bad, but it's definitely going to be impactful for Bitcoin mining moving forward in Paraguay.
Hash rate's taken a bit of a hit the last few difficulty adjustments. So anything that encourages more miners to come online, I'm for it. I'm interested now that we've seen kind of a price jump. I think we're up like, you know, it was like 7% or 8% today. If that continues, let's see what happens to the hash rate, the next adjustment. It'd be great to see some miners come back online now that they're potentially in profitability. And even if they're not, with low power and opportunities for miners, especially older equipment with Bit Farms, like you said, you're going to get more hash online, which is great for the network. We want to see that. We don't want to see too many downward adjustments because it's not good for security. And security, I think, is the bread and butter of Bitcoin, even if everyone doesn't know it yet.
I wouldn't mind seeing some downward adjustments so I could have my...
Yeah, I'm sure. Mr. Single Garage S9. I'm positive you wouldn't mind seeing a few downward adjustments.
Mm-hmm. Let's bring it down another 10%. The UK has... they announced that they want... Or they have instituted a temporary windfall tax of 25% on oil and gas profits. So this is something that has recently been temporarily imposed on all oil and gas producers. So 25% is going to be the tax windfall that's going to be imposed on them. And it's expected to bring in £5 billion over the next year. And obviously, they're cash strapped, just like most other governments. And they need to bring as much revenue as possible. What I theorize then, instead of just the profits being taxed, why not use these companies that are in oil and gas just divert those profits into Bitcoin, like ASIC equipment, purchase that and use that to mine Bitcoin.
Oh, well, this makes too much sense. There's no common sense allowed on this front line. Okay.
We know from these guys. You are changing something that is going to be taxed into something that you could then hold on your balance sheet, Bitcoin. I think they're pushing these gas and oil producers in the UK that direction. And if I was sitting on their boards, this is the one thing I would recommend. Instead of getting taxed, guys and gals, let's just use that money that we would be taxed already, divert it to buy ASIC mining equipment, not get taxed then, mine Bitcoin, put that Bitcoin in the balance sheet. It's a win-win. And as this thing gains speed, whatever you mine, it's going to be worth a heck of a lot more later on. Rather than get taxed temporarily today, let's mine Bitcoin for the future. Just makes sense.
How about... like this windfall tax, Len, can you think of another few companies maybe that produced a mandated good over the last few years that are not subject to the same windfall tax? Doesn't that strike you as like a kick in the nuts? You need so much for those oil companies to produce for you now more than ever. And still you insult them at every turn, even though they are controlling your political outcome. They're controlling your political outcome. OPEC, Exxon, these guys are controlling your fate in so many ways. And in the UK, you're telling me that, you know, European PPI up 30% or German PPI, I should say, up 30%. EU inflation, I think, measured at 8.8, something like that. Like, these numbers are crazy high. They're all linked to commodity inputs. And the solution is we got to tax these guys more. We've talked about this before. Defiant in the chat, who's now Boomer the Broken Ruler. Like, we've talked about this. If you ask commodity producers to pay more in taxes, who's going to cover the cost? You and me. It's going to be at the pump. It's going to be in the service. It's going to be in the pollution, right? If they're going to find ways to save money, and it's not going to be by eating that tax. It's going to be by passing it along or cutting corners. And Candace in the chat makes a good point too. Less investment comes to those sectors when more taxes show up. Now, I would say in the current environment, there's almost no tax that could be too high that would drive these guys away. I think the investment couldn't be any lower than it's been in the last 10 years, and it's only got one place to go given the demand that we're seeing now. So I don't know if that's true for this particular scenario, but in general, yeah, I would agree with that. And again, like in Bitcoin, we talk about this a lot because it's sort of core to the ethos of Bitcoin. Incentives produce results. And when you incentivize someone to do, you know, when you incentivize someone, let's say even apart from the commodity production, when you incentivize someone to hate you, really, I guess would be the term. Like oil companies don't like the governments around the world at the moment. And so when you incentivize someone to hate you, when you come knocking on their door to ask them for help or ask them to support you or ask them to produce more or ask them to help lower prices, like what should I say? You know, I just don't understand, you know, short of this like Marty Jones controlled demolition theory that you hear so many times. I don't understand this. And I saw today that Germany, and actually it might even be the entire European Union, is cutting off Russian gas tomorrow. 2/3 of the total imports will be cut off tomorrow. It's insane. Italy has not
agreed to that, have they?
There's probably a few countries that haven't agreed, but like, you know, Italy needs the pipelines that go through those other countries. So short of cooperation from all those countries that are nixing it, they have no choice but to cooperate. So I just don't see how this is making, it doesn't make sense to me, Len. And I don't have the bandwidth to try and pretzel my brain around it anymore. I give up on what these guys are doing. It's just completely mental.
Well, you know that the Fed's vice chair, Brainard, she said that the digital dollar is...
And there's another name, the brain in the name. How? Why? It never stops. It's a simulation. It's got to be. Come on.
She says the digital dollar is complementary to a stable system. And she says she sees potential of a digital dollar as being complementary to the stable system, as I mentioned. That would include stable coins and commercial bank money. I think that stable coins, it's not going to be something that they're going to be including. I think they're going to go ahead strictly with the CBDC just because we saw what happened with the UST, and that's going to be something that's not going to give them a lot of confidence with the stable coin, but that's just, I theorize that. But she goes on to mention a digital currency backed by the US government could be a an important support to a broader system of private sector innovation, and AKA controlling the private sector. And she says blockchain has real inefficiencies associated with proof of work in the way that it verifies a ledger. A CBDC wouldn't have those inefficiencies on settlements. She's attacking Bitcoin through the proof of work. She's trying to bring on CBDC. She's a very important person. She's the vice chair of the Fed. So this is not
she was the leading candidate to replace Powell a few months ago too. Yeah.
And she may very well be that person when he decides to step on, because she's definitely not long in a tooth. So it's quite possible that she might be the next person in line. So here we go. Like, this is another story that I'm bringing up that's talking about CBDCs. I'm not cherry picking this shit. This is something that came from Yahoo Finance, from a very prominent individual in the U.S. Federal Reserve. Think about this, folks. This shit is coming. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. I don't know when it's going to happen. I could predict in Canada and the United States, I'd throw shit on a wall, but I won't make a prediction at this point. This shit is scary. Programmable money means that they could program it, how you spend it, where you spend it, and they could control it every different way, any way, shape, or form. It's very scary stuff. Yeah. Also, in a UBI system, it works very well. I talked about that earlier. This shit is coming. So prep yourself now for the inevitable.
Buy Bitcoin, man. You cannot have enough. Word salad there. It seems to be common from, you know, the talking heads, be it in media or at central banks, stuff about blockchain inefficiencies. Proof of work's not inefficient. It's perfectly efficient. This idea that, you know, like you mentioned there, that they don't need a stable coin because they're going to use the USD, the whatever digital currency stable coin. The problem is that it doesn't solve your issue with inflation. Like, if people want to talk about not wasting a crisis, this is exactly what they mean. There's going to be a lot of people who don't understand the difference between inflationary currency and CBDCs and how those things are going to be the same anyways if they just keep printing and handing these things out. Digitizing a failing dollar is not going to help it survive. It's not going to help it retain value. In fact, it's going to do the opposite. They're going to put, you know, time limits on your money and things of that nature. It's not that hard to figure out. So before we go to the next story, should we do the draw? We had a contest today for $10,000.
Oh, yeah. Back. Do it now.
Before I forget.
That's sitting here, is it the people that are just on the stream?
I didn't say that. So next time we'll do that. But okay, so I got my random number generator here.
I like this. You're sharing the screen.
Yeah, so I'm going to just click it one time, and then I don't know who will win because I didn't look at all that stuff before the show. So hold on, let me go to the thing here. Can you see it?
I sure can, yeah.
Am I moving the mouse on there? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I'm going to do it one time. Right. It says, what does it say, Len? Minimum is zero, maximum is 100. So even if you spent a dollar, you could still win. Okay.
So right now it says 56. This is, we're not using that. It's when he generates, it's the next number that's going to be used.
Okay. So you ready?
The count of three, 3, 2, 1, go.
67 is the number. Okay. That's the number we're going to use. So if you replied to that tweet that I put out this morning before 6:30, great. We'll see, man. If you win, I'll send you a DM and I'll drop you 10,000 sats to your ShakePay account. Can't go wrong. So thank you for using the card. Thank you for entering the contest. And thank you to show sponsor ShakePay for the free sats. We're going to be working a lot more with them in the next
while. We are.
Yeah, so I'm happy to say that. What other stories you got? You got a couple more? Or we're closing on an hour and a half. I got to have a shower. Len, I ran around the block today after physiotherapy. Major milestone. I'm on like week 15 or something like that. Really happy about that. Anyway, go ahead,
sir. I got three stories. Number one, we just mentioned how they're attacking the proof of work. Let's talk about proof of stake in Solana. And the blockchain lost the track of time, and they were running at 1.30 minutes behind it real time. So there you go. Proof of stake is definitely not what it's cracked up to be. It's not ready for prime time. There's always issues with it. Solana is a perfect example of that. Periodically, the whole thing needs to be restarted. It's not something that you want to have your financial systems running on because it's not stable. It's not ready to be in prime time. So I'm not a big fan of proof of stake. Here's an example why. Proof of work makes sense. You actually do something and you get rewarded for it. Proof of stake, it's just a fucking UBI.
There's a lot of talk about proof of stake today, right? You said it there. UBI is another kind of, it's a traced photo of proof of stake. You just get something for sticking around, you know? And Solana again, like we're really talking about this stuff, this VC coin that everyone dumped on you, that Chamath and the boys were laughing at you about a little while ago. Well, the price was $100, whatever it was. Now what is it? I'm almost afraid to look. What is the price of a Solana token now? You have any idea? I don't have a clue.
No.
I'm gonna look right now just to firm up this argument that this thing.
I know what the past week it took a beating, but that's applied to everything else. I mean,
Solana right now, Solana even with Bitcoin ripping is still down for the day, $47 a token. It was as high as 250, 60. Now there's other channels, Len. Well, I don't know. There's other channels that talk about Solana and these things and talk about, especially during bull markets. Oh, I'm investing in Solana. I'm yielding. I'm staking. Like, it's all nonsense. You're part of a Ponzi. You're just the exit liquidity. You should wear a shirt that says I'm the exit liquidity. That's really what you are. If you think you got a good deal on Solana, you didn't. If you're staking and the reward is Solana, it's trash. It's a Ponzi. Okay. Have fun.
Curious, but, a month ago.
Yeah.
It was $86.
50% drop in a month. Like,
right. So like everything.
It's trash, man. It's trash.
Not named Bitcoin really took a massive shit.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, Bitcoin's off by 50% too, but
in a month?
Oh yeah. Well, no, it's not in a month. Yeah, but it's, you know, it's off 50% from its high, more than 50% from its high. So I'll just say that the other thing I would say about these alts is, if you look back at the successful tokens in 2018, that first kind of, you know, hype cycle, 2017, 18, let me know how many of those tokens still have any value and get back to me. If you think you're going to accumulate Solana and I don't know, fucking Avalanche or whatever else is out there and come back and say, you know, oh yeah, this is going to rebound next bull market. Like, there isn't another bull market for these tokens. There isn't. They're not coming back. They never come back. You can go all the way back to when alt started, when it started as ERC-20s on Ethereum. They never come back. There might be one that's still hanging around, maybe. And I think maybe the cockroach of the group might be XRP of all tokens. The thing just never seems to die. And because Litecoin, they just keep printing. That's not an ERC-20 though.
No, that's one of the first.
Whatever. It's not a proof of work coin. So, and the other thing I would say, like, if you really think that these other tokens are going to stick around, I would be surprised if the merge, if it happens, doesn't have an effect on those two, all those ERC-20s.
It's a splurge, which you got to worry about. The merge is okay.
So a friend of the show, Wayfaring Bitcoiner, is in a group chat with us and was messaging us saying that he's looked at the Ethereum thing. It's a splurge, merge, purge, dirge, merge.
A little bit more about that. But
I didn't I didn't know he wasn't kidding. That's actually in the literature. Splurge, purge, merge,
jabber, whatever. Like,
are you kidding me? You're putting your net worth in the hands of a guy who wears a unicorn onesie to conferences, picks his nose and eats it on camera, and comes up with stuff like this. Like, I don't know, man. I am like dumbfounded, honestly, but whatever. It's fine. This is the Canadian Bitcoiner show. I don't want to talk about Vitalik, correct, even though he's a Canadian.
I stand corrected. The price of Bitcoin a month ago was just a hair under $38,000. And so it's just trading slightly over $30,000. So
it trades down. Like, it's still, whether or not you and me view it as this, and the people listening and watching obviously don't, it still trades as a risk asset. And so, yeah, like, if the Qs go down, especially, I'm not breaking news here. Bitcoin trades like a leveraged position in the NASDAQ. So, whatever. If you can handle that for the time being, handle it. But eventually, I'm not going to use the word promise, and I'm not going to use the word advise, because nothing we give is advice and I don't make any promises. But I got a pretty good feeling that it's going to decouple at some point and be viewed as harder money.
I have some evidence to help you with that.
The Lightning Network. Say the same for the other tokens. Lightning Network, of course. Yeah, there's a lot of Lightning Network on there, right?
Reached an all-time high of 3,900 Bitcoin on the network.
Yeah.
This shows me that there's steady growth in this. This is the stuff you have to look for. Adoption rate and shit being built upon Bitcoin. Those are the two most bullish things you could look at to see what's going to be happening in the future with Bitcoin. The price, I could say this now because it's struggling to maintain $30,000. It's kind of secondary. But these are the things we should be looking at, because these are the things that is going to be bringing Bitcoin to the next level, and it's going to be used into the next decades and beyond. So it's adoption rate and the projects being built upon it. Lightning Network is one we should look at. 3,900 BTC is the total number of Bitcoin that's on the Lightning Network as of right now. That's a lot, and that's an all-time high, and that's at a time when the price of Bitcoin's been flattish. I don't know how you want to call it. I mean, is it drying down? It's definitely not.
It's been a slow grind, basically down or sideways for the last 3 months, and 4 months at least.
The Lightning Network continues to grow. To me, that's bullish. And we talked about last week an $18 million exchange was done, the largest ever transaction done on the Lightning Network. Sure, it took several minutes to happen, but try doing that on a traditional financing side where you try to send $18 million. It will take you days. This is the stuff we have to look at.
Take you weeks, Len. Yeah. They'll have the money. No one will have it for weeks. Not you, not the counterparty. It'll just be in limbo for weeks. Opaque purgatory for your transfer.
And hopefully you put the right... I heard stories, somebody put the wrong information on the wire transfer, gone. You'll never get it back, and that's it. See you later. So not that it doesn't
happen. Now it's being used to pay for UBI. Why don't they fund it like that? Fund it ill-filled in forms.
Okay, last story I have is not Bitcoin related, but it's certainly something I want to bring up. This is alleged. I have no proof of this, so I'm just reading an article.
This is the kind of story we like on the show.
So Paul Pelosi, the husband of Nancy Pelosi, apparently had a incident in the weekend, and DUI was the charge. Again, this is all alleged. I have nothing to prove this, so these are all allegations. So don't come at me if I got this wrong. That's what I'm reading. It's pretty sad stuff. Hopefully if there was an accident, nobody got hurt. I would hate to see somebody get hurt in this situation, but man, oh man, like, this is a high profile individual married to a high profile, congresswoman. Yeah. Like, come on, man. Like, this is shady stuff, and this shouldn't be done. Like, come on. It's 2022. Why are you jumping in a car fucking drunk? Like, get with it, man.
It's tough, eh? It's very tough. Now, Len, I have managed to track down some footage and audio from this event, if you can believe it. So I've actually I've dug into my sources. I was able to find it's pretty reliable, I think. So I'm going to play that for everyone now. And this is a CBP exclusive here.
Julian, you're right there, bud.
Unbelievable. I honestly can't believe I found this. So
is that Schumer in the background?
Yeah, Schumer and Pelosi. There he is. Oh no, Paul. Oh no.
I don't know why I feel like I get a little drink around.
Oh no.
Jim.
There's Paul getting the like Mickey out of the front seat. Bucks. Oh, my God. I can't believe it, Len. It's just.
That's a lot of money, Julian.
It's too much, man. It's too
much.
That
dude made all the right trades. And for whatever reason, the past bunch of years, it's just a magician on the stock market. So you can't make.
He's a magician, all right.
he knows what to invest in, what to long, what to short, where to put calls, where to put puts. And yeah, the man's a magician when it comes to
that. Genius. He's a genius.
Yeah.
Paul, open invite to the show, Paul. I know you're a bit old. Maybe you have someone else help you figure out StreamYard, but well, we'd love to have you in the third pane, Paul.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think everything he's done has all been above board. I have nothing to believe that he was able to get any information, this or that. Everything is just, he just has a crystal ball and a man he knows what to invest in. I like it. Hopefully you can share some of that information with me. Don't tell anybody else, Paul. Just tell me, because I'll make sure I'll keep this information here and I'll act upon it. And yeah, we'll make bank.
Let me know
when it's time to short something.
Are we doing no coiners and Bitcoiners? I've been so busy. I don't have either one. I feel like I haven't had one in a couple of weeks. So I wanted to have one, but
no, I don't have either. I have neither a Bitcoin.
Sad. No,
maybe going forward we will, but today, unfortunately, it's been a busy week. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I feel like it's getting busier. Usually in the summer, it's like things kind of slow down in the professional realm. A lot of vacations for people and teamwork kind of takes a break, but yeah, so far not quite the case this year. So yeah, oh well, maybe in June. Okay, well, that's great. What's the price of Bitcoin? Should we tell people and then get out of here, do the after show? Or what?
Yeah, man,
so the price right now is TradingView, talk to me, it is $31,605. Not bad.
We went down on the show. This is that's unreal. Okay. In Canadian, it's $40,003. So we're just hovering right above the 40K mark. Let's keep it there, boys and girls. Let's make this thing go to 50K and beyond.
So actually, we got a question for you already for the post game. So we'll cut it here. If you're on audio, come to YouTube, watch the end. And if you're already here, hang out, man. We got some stuff to talk about. So that's it. Take care. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Take care.